about that.
Hi, everybody. Here we are back again. Isn't this wonderful? Everybody looks so focused at the tables. It's really wonderful. Okay, we're ready to start. Please come in from coffee and bring everything.
May your heart be a window through which infinite kindness pours into the world. Welcome back, everyone. May each of our hearts be a window through which new blessings pour into the world. As you read through the Tutu's book, again and again, they make reference to changing the story of your life, or changing the story that you tell about your experience of injury. And so I think one of the interesting aspects of our quest for forgiveness is that our quest for forgiveness is an invitation not only to tell a new story about our lives, but also to be conscious of ourselves as story makers. Usually, we're not aware of ourselves as life story makers. We're just inside of the story that our culture's given us, our family's given us, and we have contributed some elements. But we're inside of it. We don't necessarily take it as an object of contemplation. It's when things break down that we're forced to start, we're forced by circumstances to start thinking about how are we telling the story of our lives? Am I telling the story of my life as a victim, or am I telling the story of my life as a heroic survivor, as an overcomer, or a dispassionate narrator, an ironic observer? So I think that, you know, it's like every good thing in life can be turned into a stick to hit someone over the head. And that's true about this narrative therapy, about changing your story. If my own heart is full of uncried tears, and you come to me with your story of being a victim, I may want to really like yank you through the stages so you get to that good place about telling a story where you are a heroic survivor and not a victim. And some of that rush inside of me is, I think, my own uncried tears. That you're more likely to make the transition from telling the story of your life as a victim to telling the story of your life as a heroic survivor and overcomer, if I'm more patient with you right where you are, if I can be with you and say, well, I hear that right now this, what's happened to you, it's fresh in your mind and fresh in your heart, and right this second, you really feel beaten down by it. If I can acknowledge your feelings, you might be able to work them through them better. If I start yanking you along, you'll probably start resisting. Like, get out of my face with this new story stuff, please. So I bring this up with a. I both want you to do it. I want to encourage you to become aware of the story-making dimension of your life. And I also want you to be gentle with yourself and with the people around you as you encourage people to find that new story. Aldous Huxley, I don't think that Aldous Huxley was the first person who said this, but he certainly was a famous person who said it, which is, your life is not what happens to you. Your life is what you do with what happens to you. It takes a while to get there, and I don't have a magic formula for how to introduce that idea to a person who's in the middle of experiencing themselves as a victim. But perhaps the opportunity arises to talk about your own life and your own journey toward changing your story, then that might encourage the other person to see that there are possibilities for telling a new story. So, in our next group session, I want you to share with the people at your table some features of the story that is the part of you, the story that helps you string the events of your life into a recognizable journey. And we will come back in 10 minutes. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Yes, I'm just going to finish up. I wanted to say I think that I could have expressed this a little better, so I apologize to you. I think what I wanted to say was that a deep injury or tragedy can actually shatter our life story, so that the deep injury presents us with a challenge of having to make a new life story. And in the process of doing that, we may become more aware of ourselves, of the creative element of being a person. The part of being a person is telling an uplifting and inspiring, combining the random events of your life into an inspiring story where you are moving forward and growing in wisdom and compassion and forgiveness. So, that leads to a different kind of story. The deepest stories we tell, which are our stories about God. And when we experience injury or tragedy, one of the stories in our lives that may collapse or be deeply wounded is our story about God. Which our story about God often begins with the theme of God will protect us. And we learn that early in life. And in the developmental vision, every stage of life is perfect. But we move through different stages of life. You could say, look at the clothing that a child wears. The growing child won't fit into those earlier sets of clothing, but the earlier sets of clothing were perfect at the time. In the theological point of view, or the logical, philosophical point of view, the earlier stages were wrong. They were incomplete. From the developmental point of view, the earlier stages were perfect. They were right what the person needed to understand. So the five-year-old who has the relationship to God of God will protect me, the five-year-old is not wrong. That's as much as the five-year-old can conceive of. The 55-year-old may make a transition to God is not the force that preserves me from all harm. God is the strength that allows me to bear whatever happens with compassion and kindness. That's a very different story to tell, a very different understanding of your relationship with God. And that may be perfect for where we are right now. In the developmental view, there's always more. So a couple of centuries from now, who knows what our story about God will be? So in the developmental vision, you never absolutize the point where you're standing and say, well, this is the only truth and the whole truth, and there's no other truth to be said about this. It's more like life is a deep journey. And the inspirations to me, two of the greatest inspirations in my life that of people I have read about have been Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Archbishop Oscar Romero of El Salvador. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote about this issue. He, in one of his letters from prison, he said, how is it that we call out to God when things aren't going well, and we ask for help, but when things are going well, we just don't seem to mention God's name at all? It says, how is it that we don't give thanks for God as the strength inside of us that allows things, you know, the good life inside of us that allows things to go well? So that's actually an old theme in German theology that goes back to Hildegard of Bingen, and the whole kind of theme in German theology that God is what, not that God is what is above us, but that God is the ground that's underneath us, that's supporting us like the ground under a tree. So our faith journey, in the course of our faith journey, we will probably wear out several of our stories about God. But that's not bad. That's not, if we're very attached to it, it will seem quite upsetting. But you could say that the life of faith consists of like losing your faith over and over again and getting it back, and getting a deeper faith afterwards. Because what we start out with is a kind of a starter kit. It's not it's not the adult edition. So in this particular group, I feel especially comfortable talking about our relationship to the divine, our relationship to a higher power, a relationship to the ground of being. So now for our next discussion group, I invite you to explore, you know, what is this, how are you connected to something larger than yourself that sustains you? Because I think that is a resource in our journey toward forgiveness. If you think of yourself as like, I'm just an isolated little billiard ball me bouncing into life, and occasionally I collide with other billiard balls so intensely that I may even get cracked or in the process, and I have to try and put myself back together. Well, that's a pretty lonely paradigm, and it seems to me that we could understand ourselves, and this is what most religions try to help us toward. We can understand ourselves as part of something much larger. And that something much larger is deeply beautiful. And it's calling to us to participate in that deep beauty. So now I invite you to explore with your table partners, you know, how you make sense out of that, the deeper resources that are calling to you. Thank you so much. And I'm going to come and join you at one or another tables. May every heart be filled with infinite kindness. Oh, yes, a bell, a bell, a bell. So, there's a sixth topic, making our hearts large enough to contain, to hold, both joy and sorrow. It's a deep topic in human development, and in the shape of our personalities, and in the shape of spirituality. It comes partly out of the earliest, our earliest experiences in as toddlers, trying to make a coherent world. After all, a spoon is always a spoon, and a cup is always a cup. But Mama, the most important object in our world, Mama is frustrating sometimes and comforting other times. Now, according to the developmental psychologists, this is the most profound challenge to the young child's cognitive development. And if everything goes well, the young child between, say, ages 2 and 5 develops a concept of a person, quite different from a spoon or a cup, a person who can be comforting sometimes and frustrating other times. Now, that, according to this particular, these schools of child development, that is the most important achievement in human life. And, but we're not done with it as children, because I live in a world that includes both beauty and horror, both kindness and massacre. So in a sense, if you adopt the kind of chambered nautilus spiral as a model, it's not that we are grown-up toddlers. It's that the toddler is fully human. The toddler is already dealing with polarities of experience that are going to travel with us through our entire lives. I am just as distressed by this world of mine that includes both beauty and horror as the 18-month-old who can't make sense out of Mama, who's nice sometimes and irritated other times, as mamas must be. Because life includes both those elements. So, when injury and tragedy come into our lives, one of the things that can be shattered is this, our capacity to carry joy and sorrow as being fully part of human experience. So we get challenged again and again to put that back together, to grow again. Now, on the cover of the book, of the Tutu's book, there's a new tree, and it's growing out of the stump of an old tree that got cut down. So you can think of that as a kind of archetype of renewal, our earlier integration, our earlier expansion of ourselves to be able to gracefully accommodate joy and sorrow and understand that we can walk. It's like God gave us two hands so that we could hold joy in one and sorrow in the other and be a loving companion to our brothers and sisters who also have the same challenging assignment for life. That balance is upset or shattered. And then we have to, in effect, retrace the steps of our development and make a new reconciliation, not just with that person who injured us, but with the entire world, the world we live in and the life we live in, which, as the Tutus acknowledge, contains elements that we wouldn't necessarily choose. You know, there's one place where Archbishop Tutu says, you know, this world has cruelty and violence in it that I wouldn't choose this. I wish I could live in a world where people didn't hurt each other the way they do, but this is the world I live in. You can see he himself is struggling to acknowledge those elements and somehow use them as the occasion of new, kind of mature kindness. Now, it happens that, as I thought might be the case, but I wasn't going to rush through things, our time is up for today. So I want you to think of this as a homework assignment for the rest of your life. Joy and sorrow. How can I make my heart large enough to hold both joy and sorrow? Not to specialize in one, like my Marxist friends who are perpetually unhappy and will never be reassured, or not like my New Age pals who feel that life is totally, it's all smiles, and even the murders and the calamities, well, if we dig deep enough, there must be a smile hidden in there someplace. You see, to say, well, I'm not going to play those games in my mind anymore. I'm going to say, yes, life includes joy and sorrow. I don't have an easy formula to explain why. Maybe that's not even my assignment. Maybe my assignment is to walk with it and to become kinder and more supportive of the people around me. Earlier in my life, I thought my life assignment was to have the explanation that explained it all. Now I realize, well, maybe that wasn't my life assignment after all. Maybe my assignment was to be a better companion to you and to myself, being born into this complex world and this complex life that includes both joy and sorrow. So that's my blessing for all of you. May each of us hold the joys and sorrows more gracefully and thus become a more nurturing companion for all the people in our lives.